Hello and welcome to Unusual Sources. Today we've got a very exciting show. First up, we're going to be talking to Gail Davison from Lawyers Against the War about the Qatar case, the new developments. Later on, we're going to be talking to Mark Fancher about the recent developments in Somalia. We're going to start off pretty early right now, and we're going to get Gail Davison on the line and start talking about Omar Khadr. Gail, hello, can you hear me?
Hi, Jessica. I can hear you very faintly.
Okay. You can hear me faintly. So we'll try to... Our phone lines are a little bit weak, so we'll try to speak up.
Okay.
Well, we're just going to have to go on with the interview. Hopefully, you can... We'll try to get this technical difficulties fixed.
Okay.
So first, I'd like you to address a little bit about the Khadr case. Many of our listeners know about the conditions that are experienced by him. Can you illuminate us to the legality of our government ignoring a citizen who is being tortured?
Well, there's a recent decision of the federal court that's binding on the government of Canada, and that decision was made on April 23rd of 2009, mm-hmm. so just less than a month ago. And that decision was regarding an application that had been brought to federal court by Mr. Khadr's Canadian lawyers, Dennis Edney and Nathan Whitling. The application had been argued in November of November 28th, I believe it was, of 2008. And what the application was for, the lawyers were applying for an order from the court saying that Canada had a duty for a determination by the court of whether or not Canada owed Mr. Khadr a legal duty and whether or to protect his rights and whether or not they had a duty to ask the U.S. to release him so that he could be repatriated to Canada. The federal government argued against that very strenuously. The judge obviously thought long and hard about his decision. It was Mr. Justice O'Reilly, and took several months to deliver it. His decision is very strong and very much of a precedent. The decision said that Canada does have a legal duty to protect Mr. Khadr, arising from the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and that duty was triggered when Canadian officials became involved in a process that violated Canada's international law obligations. Now, that process was the process at Guantanamo Bay, and in 2003 and in 2004, Department of Foreign Affairs and CSIS officials went down to Guantanamo Bay and interviewed, they say, other people use the word interrogated, Mr. Khadr. What the U.S. did, and the Canadians knew that they had done this, in order to soften him up for the interrogation by the Canadians, is they tortured him. They subjected him to what the U.S. Officials fondly call the frequent flyer program, and that is a program of extreme sleep deprivation. Now, both the International Committee of the Red Cross and the Special Rapporteur for Torture, the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Manfred Nowak, has said that so-called frequent flyer program, and I'll tell you what it is in a minute, when used for consecutive days and it's coupled with isolation, is torture. What this is that the prisoner is moved every 3 hours from cell to cell so that the prisoner never sleeps and remains, in addition, disoriented and is isolated throughout this whole period of time from other prisoners. And Mr. Nowak says that that's consecutive days of that treatment is torture. Omar Khadr was subjected to that for 3 weeks. Then that was followed by an additional period of isolation, kept in isolation. So the Canadians knew about that before they went down to interrogate, and it was their involvement in that illegal activity that triggered their duty. Now, the decision also confirmed that Canada has an obligation to prosecute the perpetrators of torture, which I'll come back to when I comment on the next visit of Mr. Bush, and to ensure that no fruits of torture would be used as evidence in any proceedings. They've obviously failed in both those. They're not only failed, but they refused to do that. And the court further found that Canada had a duty to take all measures, appropriate measures, to promote Mr. Khadr's physical, psychological, and social recovery.
So,
some of the factors that he considered in coming to his decision were Mr. Khadr's age at the time he was captured, his ongoing need for medical attention, his inability throughout the whole period of his captivity to be allowed to challenge his detention before a competent court, a real court of law, and the isolation to which he'd been subjected, both from his family and the isolation entailed in being kept in a remote and isolated prison. The Mr. Justice O'Reilly found that the international instruments that compelled Canada to protect Mr. Khadr were the Convention Against Torture, the Optional Protocol on the Involvement of Children in Armed Conflict, and the Convention on the Rights of the Child. He further said that the ongoing refusal, so that's as we speak, of Canada to request Mr. Khadr's repatriation to Canada offends the Charter and principles of fundamental justice. He ordered the respondents, and the respondents are the Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Cannon, the Commissioner of the RCMP, and the Director of CSIS. He ordered those four people to, quote, request that the United States return Mr. Khadr to Canada as soon as practicable, close quote. So that's the situation. He said that in view of all the circumstances, that had to be done quickly.
Yes. Yeah, so, Gail, so our government's clearly condoning his treatment, but they've also appealed this order.
Yes.
Can you?
They haven't filed a notice of appeal yet, as far as I know.
Yes. No, it hasn't been of yet, but there's indication that they will be filing an appeal. So,
yes.
So what does this mean for Canadian citizens that our government would appeal what seems to be a very right decision by the court?
Well, the interesting thing about them saying they're going to appeal, Jessica, is that under Canadian law, orders are effective from the time they're pronounced. So Mr. Justice O'Reilly's order compels the Prime Minister, I'm not going to mention the other respondents, I'll just say the Prime Minister, to do what he was ordered to do, to request the return of Mr. Khadr. Having somebody from the Department of Justice or even the Prime Minister himself say that he's thinking about appealing or even that he's going to appeal doesn't change that fact. Even if the Canadian government files an appeal, and they must do that by the 23rd, that's when their time to file the appeal runs out of May, then the order is still effective unless and until the appeal court, the Federal Court of Appeal, makes an order saying that the Mr. Justice O'Reilly's order is stayed pending the outcome of the appeal. But that's a very difficult order to get because, and I doubt if the Canadian government would succeed on that application. So Mr. Harper will remain obliged in law to comply with that order, even if they do file an appeal.
Well, that's very interesting. I'm just wondering, too, what the history is of the Canadian government doing things like this by basically saying that they're not going to help a Canadian citizen abroad. Is this going to be setting a legal precedent if they do appeal this case?
Well, if they did appeal the case, hopefully it would set a legal precedent, only in the sense that they would lose the appeal and the Mr. Justice O'Reilly's order would be confirmed. But as far as whether or not their flouting or ignoring of the law sets a precedent, it certainly doesn't, because the two of the organizations that I had, Lawyers Against the War and Lawyers Rights Watch Canada, have been communicating with Mr. Harper's office. Now, we haven't been communicating, that's a lie, because the communications have all run from us to them and never backwards. For a number of years now, the communications from those two organizations have always been not only respectful and businesslike and professional, but they've been factually and legally correct. And they've always said, these are the facts, this is the law, you're wrong in thinking that Canada doesn't have a duty to Mr. Khadr and that he can just languish in the U.S. You have a duty to repatriate him. He's never even replied to any of those, any of that correspondence. So certainly his behavior is just continuing. But it is shocking that the response that I've heard about anyway in the press to the order of Mr. Justice O'Reilly by government officials is so cavalier, because in our society that we call various things, we call it a democracy, we call it a society governed by the rule of law, the law is the alternative that all of us must use to peacefully settle and resolve disputes, including disputes involving the state's use of power. And if you don't have the law to do that, then people are left with self-help, which, of course, self-help is just the muscling and the back-and-forth use of power, which generally involves the use of violence. So it's very shocking for the actual prime minister of the country to be doing anything other than taking the order very, very, very seriously, and he obviously isn't.
Well, I think last week Canadians were pretty shocked, some of us anyway, with President Obama's decision to... So it's not just the Canadian government. It seems that the new savior of America, President Obama, seems to be weighing in on this issue. And he recently decided to continue with the military tribunals, but he claims they're going to be retooled. Do you think that these changes will mean a fair trial for Omar?
Not at all. There isn't a ghost of a chance. The only thing that I know, and certainly other people might know more, other people would know more, the only thing that I've been able to find in the press about the retooling, as you so correctly put it, because it's not a new commission, he's just going to retool a bit the commission's, George Bush's commission, is that one of the due process rights that a person has under international law is the right, when you're charged with a criminal offense, to choose your own lawyer. And, of course, under the Military Commissions Act, one couldn't. So it said they're going to expand the ability to choose one's own lawyer, so I don't know what on earth that means. They're going to restrict somewhat the ability of the military commission to receive evidence based on hearsay, which is normally not allowed altogether. And they're going to bar the reception of evidence based on torture. But, of course, given the dance that the U.S. has conducted on when torture is torture so far, I think we can pretty much assume that that will mean, at best, that evidence obtained by waterboarding is not going to be allowed. And so far, those are the only things that have been mentioned as far as the retooling is concerned.
I think
it's also important for your listeners to know that the military commissions have already been retooled. The military commissions were created by a presidential order made edict, really, by George W. November 13th, 2001, when he said, oh, well, there's certain people that we will be allowed to capture and strip of all their rights, and we won't allow them access to the protection of the Geneva Conventions, U.S. courts, courts of their own country, or international tribunals. And by and by, the Supreme Court of the United States, in a case called Hamden versus Rumsfeld in June of 2006, said, you know something, that's illegal, and those commissions are not are a violation of the U.S. Constitution. So the U.S. Congress, instead of saying, oh, fine, well, we'll try them under normal U.S. law, they passed the Military Commissions Act, which was just a retooling of the George Bush Commission. So now Mr. Obama is going to retool them again.
Well, another update with the Obama administration that is being reported in the Washington Post that they're going to be considering to keep some prisoners at Guantanamo indefinitely. Do you think that this is likely in the Cotter case?
I certainly think that at the present time it is likely. They've already been keeping him since July 22nd of 2002, and every moment of that he's been detained illegally under international law. So I see no reason why they wouldn't continue to do so. And they're not receiving any discouragement whatsoever from the Canadian government.
Well,
the other thing I think that it's interesting to note is that I think the Cotter case for the Americans is one of those ones that they gave so much press to and they lied about so much that they probably are thinking that it's kind of an important case. There's other ones like the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed case. I just can't remember off the top of my head the other accused, but that probably was considered an important case because these were people that the U.S. Pumped up as having been directly involved in the September 11th, 2001 attacks. But I don't imagine that any process with regard to these people are going to go very far because I think there will be the issue of their incompetence, their mental fragility brought on by their torturing is too much of an issue, whereas I guess they see Mr. Cotter as being still somewhat capable of instructing counsel. But the other thing about the Cotter case that's very interesting is they're saying, oh, well, he's charged with murder. Well, actually, under international law, there's no such thing as murder from one combatant to another. The only murder that occurs in conflict is two kinds of murder. It's murder to kill a civilian, and it's also murder for a combatant to kill a person who has laid down their arms or is unarmed. Either they've laid down their arms or they're injured and can't bear arms, and Mr. Cotter certainly fit that category. So the only person involved in what we know about of the incident that took place way back in 2002 is the chap, the U.S. chap, who shot Mr. Cotter in the back when he was lying on the ground under the rubble from the bombed out huts or whatever they're called that he was in. So I think that the U.S. doesn't want to uncover that whole can of worms. I think Canada also probably has reasons for not wanting Mr. Cotter back, and I think that those reasons, it's only reasonable to assume that those reasons have to do with further disclosure of wrongful or perhaps even criminal behavior on the part of Canadian officials, either at Guantanamo or at Bagram, having to do with Mr. Cotter.
Well, yes. Can you speak on this? The fact that what are these legal implications that you know that Canada is one of the last countries to try to retrieve their foreign nationals. Why have the British gotten their prisoners back? Why are other countries getting their prisoners back? And why do we continue to refuse?
Well, I'll just tell you the other Western countries that have obtained the release and repatriation of their nationals, and in the case of the UK, even of residents, is Australia, Belgium, Denmark, France, Russia, Spain, Germany, Sweden, and the UK. And as to why Canada hasn't, I think that there's a number of reasons, and one of the reasons is, now, I don't know if this reason is true or not, but is because there was a very, other than Amnesty International, really there was nobody in Canada bothering to call for Mr. Khadr's return. And even in 2007, when some law professors and parliamentarians and so on started to suggest that he should be returned, the calls were usually accompanied by saying, well, you know, the Khadr family isn't really very nice. Now, as you and I know, Jessica, if not being very nice was reason to be locked up and tortured forever, all of us would be doing some of that long time, right?
Yes, especially Stephen Harper.
Yes, exactly. He'd be ahead of the line, I guess. So that's one reason they could get away with it as far as public opinion was concerned. And the other reason is that accompanied that is, I guess they had, Canada, I think, has had much more involvement in illegal activities carried out by the U.S., particularly against detainees, than we know about.
So would you say that our actions might be worse than some of the British who were actually involved in Iraq? You think that our CSIS agents, is there definite evidence that they committed torture?
I don't think we can go on a comparative basis. You see, the situation in the UK is very different. They were a robust partner in the invasion of Iraq, and and they also had a very robust legal community, so that there was a legal community in the UK that from the get-go, like right from the time of the invasion of Iraq, were taking applications to various courts, and also the UK had a very active, has a very active, I'll call them a civil resistance movement, and civil disobedience as well. And they had lots of lawyers to defend them. So, for instance, when the Rasool case was going before the U.S. Supreme Court, there was a whole bevy of British lawyers who were going there to give, to ask for intervener status and to make submissions. So that really forced the hand of the UK to say, "Oh, all right, we'll do something about getting this person repatriated to the UK."
I also wanted to ask you finally about George W. Bush's impending visit to Canada near the end of the month. While Omar Khadr seems to be languishing in Guantanamo, our government is allowing what many people consider a war criminal to come into Canada.
Yes.
Can you address this?
Well, thank you for raising that very important issue, Jessica. It's not just many people. There's now in the United States alone 206 or 260, I don't think it matters, but legal organizations that are calling for the prosecution of the Bush administration people. There's no longer just a suspicion or reasonable grounds to think that Mr. Bush directed and authorized the widespread and long-term use of torture that has resulted in really shocking atrocities, including death and permanent injury. And for the Canadian government to flout the law, where the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act bars entry to people suspected, and the Supreme Court of Canada said suspected means more than a suspicion and less than proof to the balance of probabilities from Canada. Lawyers Against the War and many, many other organizations and people have written to the Canadian government on many occasions, pointing this out to them, saying that Mr. Bush must be barred entry into Canada. And if he enters Canada, then Canada, under the Convention Against Torture, is obliged to either prosecute him or to transfer him, extradite him, I should say, to the jurisdiction of a state that is willing and able to prosecute him. And so the fact that in one of the sponsors, apparently, of his visit is the Globe and Mail. So we not only have gangsters in government, we now have gangsters running our major, the newspaper upon which most Canadians rely, I suppose, for their information as to Canadian and foreign affairs.
Finally, Gail, you were mentioning that, you know, the reason why Britain was able to get their nationals back and, you know, they have a very robust civil disobedience and legal community. What can our listeners do to maybe help Khadr and maybe assist in this fight to prevent a war criminal from coming to Canada while our citizens are languishing in secret prisons?
They can do a number of things, and they all involve actually setting aside part of one's life to do them, you know, whether that's half an hour a day or a day a week or half a day a week or whatever. And it involves doing a range of things that are as public as possible. Now, one of them is participating in meetings and rallies, but the other one is writing to and meeting with members of Parliament, writing to and trying to meet with the Prime Minister and the Minister of Foreign Affairs and the Minister of Justice, writing to the person in charge of the RCMP War Crimes Division, and also getting your opinions published in letters to the editor, blogs, online magazines, and making your opinion known and heard.
I noticed that your website has excellent resources on Lawyers Against the War. Could you maybe give the URL to our listeners?
Sure, but the Lawyers Against the War is like hopelessly out of date, so I could give the email to your listeners and say if there's anybody keen on getting it up to date, they could email us. Our email is law@portal, that's portal.ca, and the hopelessly out-of-date website is www.lawyersagainstthewar.org.
Well, thank you, Gail, so much for talking with us today. It was absolutely wonderful, and we were very excited to have you on the program.
You're very welcome, Jessica. Thanks for inviting me. The pleasure was mine.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was Gail Davidson from Lawyers Against the War. As you probably heard, she has extensive knowledge on the legal case of Khadr. She has appeared as a legal expert in many forums, including the Keith Olbermann Show, and now Unusual Sources.